You will not believe what this Christian pediatrician has to tell us today.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Friends, about 3 hours from now, I should be speaking at a rally in front of the government building in Charlotte, North Carolina, urging the mayor and city council members not to push through a bill that will discriminate against Christians and other people of faith, and that will inconvenience, embarrass, and even endanger 997 people for the sake of 3 per thousand. I'll tell you more about that in a moment, but please pray that the city council, the mayor, would have ears to hear. And we have just gotten word today that Governor Pat McCrory, who is formerly the mayor of Charlotte, North Carolina, has said that if the city council votes the wrong way on this, which they are poised to do, and we are calling them not to do, he says that he will weigh in, that there is an immediate state response, which is likely. Pray for a good turnout, that we can send a message to Charlotte, not one of hatred, not one of anger, but one of safety and one of sanity. And this is, Michael Brown, your voice of moral sanity and spiritual clarity. Number to call today, 866-348-7884, 866-34-TRUTH. In a few minutes, I'm going to be speaking with Christian pediatrician Rosemary Stein. She is running for a key position in North Carolina. But you will be quite surprised with what she has to say about what is happening in pediatric care and in the educational world. This is from someone right in the thick of things, highly involved, highly respected. It's going to be an eye-opener for you. All right. I want to make a general observation. May I? Would you allow me to make a general observation? I'm not going to weigh in right now on the South Carolina primaries. A lot's been said already. I could add a few words on that. I want to weigh in on that right now. I want to give a larger observation of the problem I have with a gospel message that is totally non-confrontational. What do I mean by totally non-confrontational? It avoids all controversial social issues. It avoids controversial moral issues. It avoids making a sinner ever feel embarrassed or ashamed of his or her sin. Rather, it simply tells the sinner how good God is and how much God loves them and what wonderful things he has in store for them. Now, there are many truths in that. God is unimaginably good. God loves us in an unimaginable way. And for those who follow him, his plans for us are unimaginably wonderful. But that's not the whole message. And at some point, here's my issue. At some point, you need to deal with sin. It is not only the Holy Spirit who convicts people by working on their hearts. He convicts by the Word, and he convicts by his servants speaking the Word. So I always wonder, when we want to have this real nice environment so no one gets uncomfortable and no one has to deal with sin or the cost of following Jesus, okay, once you have initiated them into this, oh, wonderful, happy, oh, just sweet, gooey club that we're part of, oh, happy, happy, when do you tell them that in order to follow Jesus, you have to take up your cross? When do you tell them that in order to follow Jesus, you need to turn away from your sin? When do you tell them that in order to be a disciple, you will be opposed by this world, and it may cost you everything, but following Jesus is worth it all? At what point do we tell them the truth? Why not tell them the truth up front? Otherwise, we're leading people to Jesus based on false pretenses, and you can wonder how much they are really coming to know Jesus at all. I'll be back with Rosemary Stein. You don't want to miss this interview.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
A couple of weeks ago, I was at a meeting conference in Charlotte and had the pleasure of meeting Dr. Rosemary Stein. She is, well, just looking at her credentials, I could take a few minutes just reading through them, practicing pediatrician, education subcommittee chair, governor's advisory counselor for Latino Hispanic affairs. She's born in New York City to Dominican immigrants, board of the North Carolina Smart Start Foundation, and on it goes. North Carolina Superintendent's Graduation Task Force, board of trustees for Almanance Community College, chair of curriculum for the college, National Governors Association Early Literacy Committee. I say all that so that you'll know when Rosemary starts to share some things that are somewhat controversial, you'll know the controversy is because of facts, because of truth. Dr. Stein, welcome to the Line of Fire. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much, Dr. Brown. I'm so happy to be here. And hearing that long list actually makes me a little embarrassed.
Yeah, I understand that feel more embarrassed because I left a few items out on top of it. Dr. Stein, what are you currently working towards now for the state of North Carolina?
Well, I'm running for superintendent of public instruction to be the head of all public instruction in the state.
All right. And what exactly would that mean? What role would you have? What potential influence would you have?
Well, hopefully I would be the voice of reason to talk about education and where we should be heading as a state, but also individually. What are we looking for? What are we looking to accomplish within our educational system on a big basis, but also with our kids individually? It is my premise that we're not doing very well. Certainly as a country, when you compare us to other countries, we're not doing very well. And I would say that as a state, we could be doing a lot better when it comes to educating our children and preparing them for life, not for just a job, but preparing our children for life.
All right. In what ways are we not doing well, especially compared to other countries?
We don't have thinkers. We have kids that, if we get them through high school, they're able to perform skills. But we are lacking in our critical thinking abilities. And anybody that goes through a McDonald's line knows that if you hand one of our young employees a 20, and let's say the bill is 11.25 or another number, that they may not be able to calculate, unless they have a calculator, how much to give you back. That's just a small example, but these are skills that we need to have early on in life, but also to be able to argue a point or to make your stand on the opinions that you have and think of them logically. That's a very important task for children, for teenagers to be able to accomplish, and we're not getting that done.
All right. Now, I want to talk about that more, and I want to talk about some of your larger philosophy of being parent-centric versus child-centric and some of the bigger problems we have in societies. You've written about that. But we talked briefly about gay activists and their heavy involvement in the education system and in pediatrics and other forms of care. Now, in my mind, this is not because they're sexual predators looking for a way in to seduce children. It's simply that they want to have an impact and get their agenda across educationally and in these other realms. In other words, they have an agenda that they feel is best. We strongly oppose it on many, many fronts, but there's no denying the activism. What have you seen in terms of the predominance of gay activism? Let's focus first on pediatrics. What have you seen there? You made a statement that it was very, very striking in terms of a percentage of lesbian pediatricians compared to Christian pediatricians.
My greater point to what you're asking is that most children by far are born into a heterosexual marriage. And even more important than that is that the healthiest place for a child to be and to grow up is a heterosexual life. We know that when our children choose or develop into a lifestyle that's not heterosexual, they have more of a tendency toward mental illness, and they have much higher suicide rates. So as parents, we want to be advocating for a lifestyle that is the safest of all.
Mm-hmm.
But to your question about our medical schools, and I do not mean to be controversial at all, but it's that in our homes, in our communities, in our churches, we tend to be conservative, and we think that people that are in medical communities are conservative, like we are conservative, because it makes sense. If you know what the body is, if you know how the eye is made, you should have an understanding that there is a power greater than I that put all of that together. But sadly enough, that's not so. And in many of our places of academia, there isn't the respect and the knowledge of God. And because of that little respect for what is true and is a different worldview, which is our Christian worldview, is not there. And because of that, then that type of worldview is passed on to the medical students. And when you see a doctor from 40, 50 years ago, you knew that mostly that doctor had a fear or respect for God, and that has been waning much more, where there isn't that anymore. And I don't know if I explained that well.
Yeah, so in other words, your issue is not who has the right to be involved with teaching children or caring for children or things like that. Your issue is what environment provides the best growing experience, learning experience, safety experience for a child, and that's being raised by a mom and a dad, at best a biological mom and a dad, and that because of that, when others come in with other ideologies or presuppositions, that's going to have a negative impact on the overall well-being of the children. So what's happening in a lot of our school systems in terms of gay activists getting a certain curriculum or worldview into the schools and Christians not really responding?
Well, I mean, based on what I said, it will make the outcome of the child less safe. And I can't speak a lot to whether gay activists are in school. And I don't want to be accusatory in any way, but I'm an advocate for the child. I want that child to grow up as healthy in body, in spirit, and in mind as possible. And I know what produces the best outcomes, and that would be a mom and a dad. And that's almost impossible to ask for in today's society. But growing up in an environment where you do have a stable mom or a stable dad or a stable grandparent, and then being brought up to understand your sexual identity, which is a very important thing. Sexual identity, to me, is an important way to relate to who you are in life. And the other thing is, every cell in your body tells you what sexual group or gender you belong to. It's imprinted in all of your cells. So that there's a reason that when a person is not what you know what their cells tell them that they are, that they are in conflict. They feel conflicted. It's a more difficult life, and I don't want any child to grow up being in that kind of conflict. And I don't know if that is offensive to anybody. I certainly don't mean to be, because I love all children. I love my patients that have gender identity problems as much as the ones who are very sure of their identity in their gender.
All right, and just in your own profession, just say colleagues and things like that, so folks can know that Christians need to be more of a positive presence. Would you say among pediatricians that you work with that you have more Christian colleagues or more lesbian colleagues, or impossible to say?
I would say that I have, because of who I am, and that I am a pediatrician who happens Actually, I'm a Christian who happens to be a pediatrician, let's put it
right,
that way.
Right.
Because of that, I have more doctors that I know that are Christians, but that I'm friendly with that are Christians. But by and large, most doctors that I associate with more on a daily basis are not Christians. And I think that that's the way that society is today, where people are assuming that their doctors might be Christian or might have a fear of God, but that's not so in today's society. And I'd like to see the society get closer to that, where we are Christians again.
All right, tell you what, I want to discuss with you on the other side of the break, just in a few more minutes we have, the question of how to raise children, the philosophy surrounding the parents, surrounding the children. How do we look at this with Dr. Rosemary Stein?
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I'm speaking with Dr. Rosemary Stein, pediatrician and educator. Dr. Stein, if folks listening in North Carolina want to find out more about what you're doing or how to stand with you or vote for you, what's the best way to do that?
Thank you for asking that. You can look at my website, www.drrosemarystein.com. You can Facebook me and go to my Facebook site, which is Rosemary Stein, MD. And if it's hard to remember my last name, I created a little jingle. It's Help Kids Shine, Vote for Stein, because that's what I'm really looking for, kids to shine again. And I just feel the reason that I'm down this path is because more and more in my 23 years, I realized that children were not fulfilling that potential. Each child has a great potential, and it's not being fulfilled because we've steered off the track.
All right, and you have written that we need a revolution in the way we're raising our children, not just educating our children, but raising our children. And in a little book that you put together with your husband, you have some very striking examples of kids who were cutting themselves, kids who were getting thrown out of daycare and just completely uncontrollable. Then when parents made adjustments in the home, there were dramatic improvements in the kids. And we understand there are kids that have their chemical imbalances or various issues that need medical intervention, but a lot of things don't come down to that. So give us the larger picture of the problem and the simple adjustments that need to be made in our thinking.
Thanks. I discovered parent-centric parenting through a good friend, John Rosemond, a few years ago. Many of you are familiar with John Rosemond. He's a Christian family psychologist. But I really started understanding it. It blew my mind to think that we're creating almost a different kind of brain by giving children a completely different experience and ways to develop. So a lot of what we're seeing when it comes to ADHD, dyslexia, behavior that is unusual, we didn't used to see this very much at all when we were kids. And it's because of the different experiences that we're giving our children, because we've set them in the middle of our home. Instead of being a parent-centric home where we understand that the children are there to learn from mom and dad, and that is our God-given mission. And I would dare say that one of our most important jobs in life is to train the next generation. But instead of having it that way, we have right now a child-centric society in parenting, where we place the child in the middle of the home. That child is allowed to make the decisions for the home and sort of steer and guide the home and where it should go. We make decisions on what we're going to eat, where we're going to go on vacation, who we're going to visit, based on our children's choices. And obviously the two paths are completely in complete different directions. And so that produces a completely different person.
Got it. So life does not revolve around the desires of the child. Obviously, we see a real problem with childhood obesity these days, and much of that has to be put on the parents because a lot of the children don't have the choices to make with food and things like that. And the same way, in terms of the child's will must be done as opposed to the child being submitted to the parents. We've gotten things really turned around. Is that reflected in our school systems as well, Dr. Stein?
Absolutely. And remember, those first 5 years of being a parent, especially of being a mom, is really trying to have the child understand a very loving authority that comes from that mom. By no means do I mean to sound like I'm trying to get the parent and the mom to lord over her child. It's a much more loving but firm and mission and vision-oriented parenting that I'm talking about. It's more in the way that you present yourself to your child, that child will understand that you are there and you're their rock up until the time that they leave your home.
Yeah, and again, this is now going to be reflected. And once the kids go to school, what their attitude is towards authority, towards teachers, towards learning, towards being stretched, and things like that. And Dr. Stein, the good thing is you've seen great results over these 20-plus years. The bad thing is society as a whole keeps going in the wrong direction. Friends, if you're listening anywhere in North Carolina, you're thinking, wow, it'd be nice to have someone like that as a superintendent of schools and really influencing the curriculum or the thought process or the philosophy of teachers, administrators. That would be great. Tell us again where to go. I like the rhyme. You're obviously someone that works with children a lot. If you want these kids to shine, vote for Dr. Stein. But go ahead. Tell us where to go again online.
And one more thing. We did write another book. It's like we don't have enough time. Vote for Dr. Stein. We wrote another book, and this one is trying to elevate the mom, have her understand her value and her importance in society and in raising that child. It's called Who Needs a Village? It's a mom thing, because it's mom. It comes down to mom, and of course dad as well, but it starts with the mom. And so it's drrosemarystein.com, and the jingle is Help Kids Shine, Vote for Stein. And if you put that in on Google, you will find me.
Awesome. All right. Dr. Stein, thanks for joining us, and may God's blessings be on your effort. Much appreciated.
Thank you so much. It was such a pleasure. God bless you as well.
God bless you. It's a joy. All right. Friends, starts in the home. It all starts in the home, doesn't it? Listen, I've got a very, very special announcement. Give me your next year, please, just for the next next 2 minutes. Can you do that? I'm not backing down, friends. I am not backing down. We get flack, criticism, attack, day and night, from every corner, from every side. And it's a joy because it's for the truth. I'm thriving. I'm blessed. I'm full of joy. I'm full of grace. I am enjoying this calling of the Lord. But I'm not backing down to keep people happy. I'm not backing down to keep criticism down. I'm not backing down to do things that are politically correct. No way, no how. In fact, by God's grace, we are seeking to expand all of our efforts. My articles, sharper than ever, reaching more and more people. Our videos, reaching more and more people every week and putting out more and more cutting-edge videos. And this broadcast, The Line of Fire, we have opportunities to blanket America with the broadcast, but we need your help. This is not my thing. This is our thing. Together, we're making a difference. Together, I can be your voice, and we can speak to the nation. We need to greatly increase our torchbearers, our monthly supporters, and I'm asking you to help us with at least $1 a day per month. Almost all of you, if you'll step out in faith, can do it. Some can do it easily. Some can do 10 times that amount with no problem. But I want to challenge you and invite you. Every dime will go to expanding the work that we're doing. Every single dime, that's exactly where it will go. So when you do that this week and next week only, I want to send you as my thank you gift the Modern English Version, a slimline leather-like Bible. This is in the tradition of the King James, the best new translation of that tradition. And two of my most popular messages on CD, a $50 value, as my thank you gift. Go right now to Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org. Click on Donate. Become a monthly supporter.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome to the line of fire, 866-34-TRUTH. Joey, I did not see your question there. Sorry for my ambiguous communication during the break. 866-348-7884. I want to play a clip for you from our friend Donald Trump, the ubiquitous Donald Trump, the always in the news Donald Trump, the Republican frontrunner Donald Trump. I want to play a clip for you, and I want to get your reaction to this. He was on Fox and Friends Weekend, and he was talking about the support he got from evangelical Christians in South Carolina who shockingly voted more for him than they did for Ted Cruz, whereas Ted Cruz is a diehard evangelical with a strong track record, and Donald Trump is anything but an evangelical, always has been and still is today. And yet he got more of the evangelical vote than Ted Cruz, something that no one would have predicted some months back, or I should say very few, if any, would have predicted. So he explains why. Very, very interesting. He explains why. Let's listen to what he said.
You are a man of faith. You believe in God. But everybody said, okay, he's going to wind up, Ted Cruz, with the evangelicals. You actually beat Ted Cruz with the evangelicals. How'd you do that?
Substantially. Well, I'll tell you, I got a great deal of help from Jerry Falwell Jr. He's the head of Liberty University, and he has done an incredible job, and he's respected by everybody. And he came out and endorsed me. And, you know, every candidate goes through Liberty University. This place is unbelievable. You have to see the auditorium and the stadium, actually, an arena that we speak in. And every single candidate goes there. And people were shocked when he came out in favor of me. And that was a big endorsement. I had Robert Jeffress, you know, Pastor Jeffress, who has been so incredible in his support. He's been on your show many times, but he came out in favor of me. And, you know, hey, look, I am a good Christian. I really am. And I think the evangelicals saw that.
Okay. Yes, Jerry Falwell Jr. did support him, and I'm sure that did a lot for many people. Of course, I took issue with the nature of his support, first in presenting Donald Trump as this mega Christian, this amazing Christian, then backing off from that and saying, hey, look, our biggest issues are economy and security, which I differ with. Our biggest issues are moral first. But Robert Jeffress, he did appear with Donald Trump, but I thought he immediately said that he did not endorse him. So I'm not quite sure about that. But from what I understand, Donald Trump got the evangelical support that he did, not primarily because of those endorsements, and certainly not because evangelicals thought that he's a good evangelical Christian. I don't think that the vast majority of evangelicals who voted for Donald Trump in the South Carolina primary voted for him because they think he's a, quote, good Christian. Most of those that I've interacted with that are voting for him say, of course we know he's not a Christian. That's not the issue. We're looking for a businessman. We've had it with Christian candidates who don't live up to our expectations, or we've had it with someone who's just a career politician, which, by the way, is when you've got someone like some of these folks running. Ben Carson obviously is not a career politician. Mike Huckabee was a governor, but he hasn't been a governor for a while. He's not a career politician. Ted Cruz is a senator for the first time. He's obviously not a career politician. But in any case, the idea that we need an outsider, that you can't have somebody from within the party, and that Trump is channeling a lot of the fear of Americans, a lot of the anger and frustration of Americans. But I don't think that evangelical Christians are thinking that he's a good Christian, and that's why they voted for him. If you can differ with me if you like. I'll take some calls on this, 866-348-7884. But if you're a Trump supporter, are you supporting him because you think he's a good Christian? By the way, I have a question for Donald Trump, which is, sir, how long have you been a good Christian? If he says my whole life, then he's shouting to the world, I have not the slightest idea of what it means to be a good Christian. If he says I've only recently rediscovered my faith and I'm really trying to learn what it means to be a Christian now, okay, maybe that's true. I don't know that he's saying that. We'll be right back.
Fire we want, for fire we It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome, friends, to The Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH. Again, just curious, if you are a Donald Trump supporter, are you supporting because you think he's a good Christian, or do you recognize he's anything but a good Christian and you're supporting him for other reasons? Just curious about that. Maybe I could do a poll later on Twitter to find that out. 866-348-7884. Okay. I wrote an article that came out today, and it's actually getting a lot of attention. On one website alone, it went live, what time, about 10-something this morning, and it's been shared almost 6,000 times since, so it's getting out a lot. It's called Stephen Curry, Manny Pacquiao, Tiger Woods, and Nike. Yeah, a little different article title. Stephen Curry, who is a committed Christian, his dad Dale Curry. Stephen plays in the Golden State Warriors, the world champs last year in the NBA, and right now is playing at the level of the best player in basketball. And he comes into the story a little later. Manny Pacquiao, one of the greatest fighters of all time, and now a committed Christian. You say, how can you be a boxer and a committed Christian? Well, it is contradictory on a certain level. He's not trying to hurt people in any lasting way. It is a violent sport, and yet he's really had a life transformation, went from drinking and immorality and cheating on his wife and all of that to really following the Lord. And I've got some friends that know him in the Philippines, and he seems to be very genuine. And then Tiger Woods, of course, the world's most famous golfer. He's hit on hard times for some years now, but the world's most famous golfer. And what brought a jarring halt to his success was when it was found out that he was a serial adulterer, that he had been sleeping with different women, including porn stars, over a number of years, and more came out about his affairs. Of course, his wife divorced him and took the kids, so it was a real destructive, terrible time. Of course, forgivable, like everything else, absolutely forgivable. And Americans, we love stories of redemption and things like that. But why do I bring this up? Okay, here's what happened. Tiger Woods was one of the big Nike stars, probably the biggest Nike star, or one of the two biggest. So advertising their brand, he made tens of millions of dollars probably every year and helped Nike get their brand out more and more and more. He was one of the major faces of Nike sneakers and sportswear. And even his golf gear that he would wear would be marked by Nike symbols and things like that. So in certain ways, he was one of the major faces of Nike. Well, it's a terrible shame now when he is guilty of serial adultery and it comes out one person after another after another. I mean, it's a real, real scandal. But when this came out, December 14th, 2009, as Reuters reported, Nike Inc. chairman and co-founder Phil Knight said the scandal surrounding Tiger Woods is, quote, part of the game in signing endorsement deals with athletes, and he did not back away from the athletic shoe and clothing maker's relationship with the golfer. And then Knight said this, I think he's been really great. When his career is over, you look back on these indiscretions as a minor blip, but the media is making, a big deal out of it right now. Well, let me say this, the media did make a big deal out of it because it was a big deal. One of the most famous athletes in the world, and on all of his commercials and everything that, where he would appear, he had this certain image of wholesomeness and nice smile and things like that. And yet, here he was a married man, a father, and he was committing adultery with numerous women. Now listen, I don't know how others of us would do in his shoes. In other words, all the power that he had, all the influence that he had, all the money that he had, opportunities to be with women that we will never meet in our lifetimes. I'm not condemning the man. Plus, he's not a believer, so he needs the Lord. So I don't say this to condemn him at all. My hope was always that this would bring him to a place of brokenness and that he'd find the Lord and new life through it. All I'm saying is that Nike did not drop him and said that his multi-year, multi-woman adulteries are a minor blip. All right? Now, Manny Pacquiao, one of the greatest boxers of all time, the only man to win titles in eight different weight classes, and about to retire after his last fight in April. That's the plan anyway. He has spoken a few times about homosexuality and about redefining marriage. And he made a statement that was on local Philippine TV station. Now, someone posted on my Facebook page today that even what he said is being mistranslated. I guess he spoke in the Filipino dialect as opposed to in English. But here's what's being quoted. It's common sense. Do you see animals mating with the same sex? Animals are better because they can distinguish male from female. If men mate with men and women mate with women, they're worse than animals. Now, obviously, the quote that got out is that Manny Pacquiao said that homosexual men and women are worse than animals. And that's terribly derogatory and a very ugly statement, and certainly not a Christian statement either. His point, of course, was that animals, by and large, don't engage in acts like that. When they do engage in them, it's not normally for the same reasons that homosexual men and women do. But put that aside. He was generally saying that nature reproduces and so on. So even if you take issue with that part of the statement, in that sense, his point was that homosexual couples don't have the sense that animals do. Now, again, it was unchristian, derogatory statement, an unnecessary statement. He immediately apologized for it, okay? There was an uproar, and he immediately apologized. Let me just get his exact words for you. He posted this: I'm sorry for hurting people by comparing homosexuals to animals. Please forgive me for those I've hurt. I still stand on my belief that I'm against same-sex marriage because of what the Bible says, but I'm not condemning LGBT. I love you all with the love of the Lord. God bless you all, and I'm praying for you. So it was a humble apology. As a Christian, of course, he stands by what Scripture says, but he did apologize for hurting people, and he expresses his love. And he's instantly dropped by Nike. Instantly dropped by Nike. Quote, "We find Manny Pacquiao's comments abhorrent. Nike strongly opposes discrimination of any kind and has a long history of supporting and standing up for the rights of the LGBT community. We no longer have a relationship with Manny Pacquiao." Boom. Goodbye. Wash your hands of it. End of story. Tiger Woods, multiple adulteries, multiple women, including porn stars. It all comes public over multiple years, destroys his marriage, betrays his children. Oh, it's a minor blip. A minor blip. Manny Pacquiao makes a comment that takes a few seconds to make, immediately apologizes for it. He's gone. Goodbye. We no longer have a relationship with Manny Pacquiao. What hypocrisy. What utter hypocrisy. And I wonder, the executives at Nike, the male executives there, ask your wives, which do you think is a more serious thing? What would they rather that you did as a husband? Committed multiple adulteries with different women, including porn stars, that all went public over a period of years and destroyed your marriage and betrayed your children, or one time made a regrettable comment and immediately apologized for it? Come on. Manny committed the cardinal media sin, thou shalt not criticize homosexuality. Now, on his end, he said no big deal to lose the endorsement, and he was retiring from boxing anyway. And he reinforced his views. I rather obey the Lord's command than obeying the desires of the flesh. I'm not condemning anyone, but I'm just telling the truth of what the Bible says. The truth from the Bible is what changed me from my old ways. 2 Corinthians 6:9, do you not know that wrongdoers will not inherit the kingdom of God? Do not be deceived, neither the sexually immoral, nor idolaters, nor adulterers, nor men who have sex with men. God bless everyone. I love you all. That's what he posted. That's where things stand, and I don't expect them to change with Nike. Okay, you say, well, you haven't said anything about Stephen Curry. Ah, Stephen Curry had an offer from Under Armour sneakers, which is the number two, I understand, to Nike right now. Nike way ahead in America, probably worldwide. And Stephen Curry twice had opportunities for Nike to sign him, including when Nike had the opportunity to match the offer that Under Armour had given him. Now, Nike apparently had reasons for not wanting to sign him and not knowing how well his sneaker would sell and other things. But there may be one other reason, a major reason, that ties in directly with the gospel, scripture. Could it be that Nike was allergic to that yet? It's a question mark we're looking into. I'll fill you in on the other side of the break.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to The Line of Fire broadcast. Okay, so I was talking about Nike's double standard with Tiger Woods and Manny Pacquiao. Tiger Woods' multiple serial adultery destroys his marriage, betrays his children, sleeps with porn stars while married. All this explodes in the public. Terribly shameful. And does Nike drop him? No. Okay. Maybe Nike's very forgiving. Maybe Nike's the type of company that says, hey, we make a deal with you and we're with you for the long haul. His indiscretions, his sexual sins, his adultery, destroying the marriage, quote, minor blip. A minor blip. That's how Nike put it. Manny Pacquiao, greatly beloved athlete. No, not with the star power of Tiger Woods in America. I mean, Philippines, Manny Pacquiao in the Philippines is far bigger than Tiger Woods in America because of being one of the world's most famous athletes and being a Filipino. And a man who's done a lot to help his country, given a lot of money away to help the poor and needy because he grew up on the streets. So he makes one unfortunate, regrettable comment about homosexuality. Homosexuals, immediately apologizes for it, and Nike drops him like a hot potato. Seems a little peculiar to me, truth be told. In fact, next hour I'm going to speak with Chris Stone. Chris Stone is a founder of Faith Driven Consumers. I'm going to bring this up to him. It's not on our agenda to talk about. We're going to bring it up to him in the next hour. But enter Stephen Curry. So he has a contract with pending contract with Under Armour, one of the biggest sneaker companies after Nike. And Nike is given the opportunity to match the offer, but declines. Now, I've gotten online to look into this. Why did Nike decline? Well, his ankles, how strong are his ankles? It's going to make it long term. Well, will he be able to sell shoes? Well, I mean, he's one of the most popular athletes in America, probably in the world right now. Considered to be, at present, the best basketball player alive, the way he's playing right now, not of all time or anything like that, but the way he's playing right now, the best player in the league this year and therefore the best player in the world. And his team is very, very popular to watch. And it turns out that with this contract, now that he's signed it with Under Armour, the shoes are selling off the shelves. And Under Armour's profile is rising because of that. So Nike clearly made a mistake in not signing him from a business vantage point. But he did tell Under Armour that he wanted to put on the tongue of the sneaker, so where you lace it over there, on the tongue of the sneaker, he wanted to put PHIL for Philippians 4:13. Okay? So Philippians 4:13, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. He wanted to have that PHIL 4:13 on the tongue. And then on the underside, when you have, you know, you're pulling it out and things like that and tightening the sneaker, the underside, I can do all things. So Philippians 4:13, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me, and put in as much as you can. I can do all things, but with the reference to Philippians 4:13, it's through Jesus, the Messiah, who strengthens us. Now, I have read, but I can confirm, that Nike wasn't happy with the religious message. Now, I'm going to look later to see if anybody posted on that on any of the articles, because I said, if you have verification, please let us know. If you have verification, let us know so that we can clarify that. But what I do know, is that that Under Armour said yes, and Nike chose not to sign him. Does this play in? It wouldn't surprise me. Now, here's what someone posted on my Facebook page. I'd like to point out that most translations of what Matty said are actually mistranslations. He did not say, gay people are worse than animals. He said, in effect, that people, humans, generally as opposed to homosexuals specifically, would be worse than animals if we fail, refuse to make gender distinctions that animals do. The popular clip going around also cut off the part where Matty clarifies, I'm not condemning them, just same-sex marriage. The media obviously left that part out to generate more of a controversy. Yep, the media, once again, fooling people, or quoting in part, and on it goes. Okay. Before I finish up today, let me say this. I plan to write a major article on this. Nancy and I were talking about it last night. And it's just grievous. You cannot believe a lot of what you see and hear and read because it is misleading. It is quoting in part. It is misrepresenting the tone. There was a video that was posted online where Marco Rubio is walking into a lobby, I guess, of a hotel. Rafael Cruz, Ted Cruz's dad is there, and a staff member is there. And Marco Rubio comes walking in and says, and the staff member's got a Bible in front of him, reading the Bible. And Rubio says something like, looking for answers, especially in that book, not going to find them. Something like that. Not going to find answers in that book. And people said, look at this. In fact, a Cruz campaign guy said, look at this, and sent it out and then apologized for it. Big mistake. Big mistake. I saw it. I sent it to Nancy, and we were shocked. And even watching it, you know, why would Marco Rubio, who's a devout Catholic, insult the Bible? And his whole demeanor just seemed very curt. Well, then found another report saying, no, that's not what he said. The staff member himself corrected it. That's not what he said. He didn't say not find answers in the Bible. He said all answers are in the Bible. In other words, it's quickly said it's in the background, but the transcription that was put on the screen was wrong. And when we watched it the second time, to our surprise, Marco Rubio's demeanor seemed different. Are you listening to me? His demeanor seemed different, even though it was the exact same video, because the transcription, that someone misunderstood what he said, the transcription gave a different impression of his appearance. It's crazy. MSNBC a couple days ago took a quote from Bill Clinton as if he was speaking against Obama, and he wasn't. They cut it off in midstream when the whole clip is played. He was not saying that at all. He was criticizing Congress for not working with President Obama. And here they said Bill Clinton said thus and such against President Obama, and then MSNBC gave this tepid apology. Well, we really saw that. It's nonsense. I see headlines all the time, thus and such. And then I read the article, and the article doesn't say thus and such. So be really, really careful what you spread, what you share. Get your facts in order as much as possible. Yes, what Manny Pacquiao said was still regrettable in the way he said it, and that's why he apologized for it. But it could be the way it's being reported exaggerates it even more. Friends, be sure you check out our special resource offer this week for all new torchbearers. We've never done this before, but we really need to double our torchbearers to do what God's calling us to do across the nation and around the world. So stand with us today. You will be blessed richly as you do with our appreciation gifts and what we sow into every month. Go to AskDrBrown.org. You'll see it right on the homepage. My bottom line today, be very careful, not just what you hear, but how you hear. Be sure to check things out. Don't be a false witness. Well, there's a new big Christian movie out, Risen. Does it live up to its billing?
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome, friends, to The Line of Fire. 866-34-TRUTH is the number to call. That's 866-34... Did I ever get that wrong? 348-7884. Okay. All right. About 2 hours from now, I will be speaking in Uptown Charlotte in front of the Charlotte-Mecklenburg Government Building. There'll be a rally there. It should be well-attended, as we are calling on the city council not to push forward a bill that will discriminate against Christians, that will inconvenience, embarrass, and potentially endanger the massive part of the population to accommodate a few individuals that we care about, maybe 3 out of 1,000 who are struggling. It is a wrong-headed bill. At this point, the city council is definitely going the way of passing it because of the way it's stacked. But by God's grace, we will turn that around. And Governor McCrory, who was the 14-year mayor of Charlotte, Governor McCrory has weighed in as governor and said, if you do it, you can expect immediate response from the state. If you can make it, please do. If you have to leave work a little early, you say, why is it important? Well, you need to know what's going on. You need to hear the issues. There'll be quite a few excellent speakers bringing clear messages, not in hate, but in love, not with exaggeration and hyperbole, but speaking truth. But you also need to be there to make a difference. You say, how? As we have a good turnout, we are sending a message to the state saying this really matters. In fact, I've got a letter. I wrote this letter on behalf of the Coalition of Conscience. So I wrote it for those in Greater Charlotte, North Carolina. The letter itself is 8 pages long, detailing the concerns of what would happen if the Charlotte City Council passes this bill, which the mayor is pushing for and the city council is pushing for. It is followed by, let me just see here, roughly 16 pages of signatures of business owners, of church leaders, of, I mean, just one after another after another. I'm looking at, you know, all kinds of churches, all kinds of businesses, all kinds of folks in society, all saying the same thing, do not do this. You're talking about representing tens of thousands, perhaps hundreds of thousands of people overall represented by the signing here. So very, very important that you pray that truth would triumph, that light would shine, and that people would wake up to reality. It's not a matter of hatred. This is not a matter of bashing people. This is a matter of reality. This is a matter of saying, hey, do what is right. And as we do what is right, everyone around will be blessed. As we do what's right, everyone else will be enabled and helped. So join me if you can. If you can't be there, if you have not yet signed the petition and you live or work in or near Greater Charlotte, go to don'tdoitcharlotte.com, D-O-N-T, don'tdoitcharlotte.com. Sign the petition and be in prayer. There'll also be good opportunities for us to interact with protesters and others who differ. That is almost certainly going to happen. So this is a great opportunity to share the gospel with people who will otherwise be hostile, perhaps form some relationships that will lead to blessing coming into their lives. And I'd appreciate if you pray. Right after that, we fly to Nashville, Tennessee, and then be coming your way live the next few days from National Religious Broadcasters in Nashville. You never know who you're going to run into and grab on the air for an interview. In fact, one day I should be interviewing the pastor of the world's fastest growing church from India coming into the States as well. All right, 866-348-7884. When we come back, we're going to talk about the new movie, Risen, with Chris Stone, founder of Faith Driven Consumer.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
When the Messiah comes, Rome will be nothing.
Until then, the Nazarene city'd rise again after 3 days. We will lose peace and order if it's true.
The body has vanished. His tomb is empty.
The new movie, Risen. I'm joined now by Chris Stone, founder of Faith Driven Consumer and certified brand strategist. This is Chris's statement. Hollywood has rolled out a number of biblically themed offerings in recent years with some hits and misses. In our regular engagement with studio executives, we encourage them to remember that success at the box office stems from authenticity, being true to both the biblical story and message. That is exactly what faith audiences want. Sony's Risen, fast-paced, unexpected, and fascinating, above all, delivers on the promise of authenticity. While it is not directly biblical, it is contextually accurate and offers a real-world journey through Christ's crucifixion to his ascension. It reminds us all that the most unlikely person can be drawn to and forever changed by Jesus. Risen is, at long last, the movie we've all been waiting for. Chris, those are big words. You really believe that?
Yes, we do. Sony and the people that put this movie together did a good job. Is it perfect? No. But is it largely a good job? Absolutely. And that's what we're looking for, is when they do something that's authentic, that speaks to the faith-driven consumer community.
All right. Now, this is obviously your opinion. We don't know this for a fact, but what would motivate Sony, a secular company, to put out a movie like this?
It's profitable. They have found an audience. They're in the business of making movies to entertain and to appeal to an audience. So they're fulfilling their mission, and we're delighted that they're including faith-driven consumers in that mission.
All right, so let's think back to a few previous movies in the last year that were mega-buck spectaculars. So there was Noah about the flood, and then there was, what was it, of Gods and Kings about the Exodus.
Yeah, Gods and Kings.
Right, what was your take on those two movies?
Well, those movies are very similar to each other and very different from Risen and others that we would consider to be successful. Noah had a very strong foundation from Darren Aronofsky, who wrote and brought that movie to us. He had a lot of himself in there. There's something called a tour theory, where the person making the movie has influenced it so much, it's like they wrote the original story.
Uh-huh.
So he literally took that story and made it his own. The problem was, when he made it his own, it was no longer ours. And largely, and similarly, Exodus, Gods and Kings was in the same venue. Ridley Scott, who was the director of the movie, largely and admittedly did not believe the story. So as he
right.
crafted it around his own image of what he could stand to produce, it became something that wasn't ours.
Right.
Risen, on the other hand, they took great pains to make it generally marketable while being appealing to faith-driven audiences.
What kind of impact is it having on folks who have viewed it?
Well, you know, curiously, we spent a reasonable amount of time opening up our Sunday morning lesson prior to the church service talking about the movie, and it was well received by people in the room that had seen it over the weekend, and people are generally enjoying it as entertainment. They're enjoying it as a story. Often movie producers and studios complain that there are a whole lot of large contextual holes in the Bible story that they have to fill in with their own creative endeavors. And at this time, with Risen, they did a good job of filling in the daily activities and details of life that would have happened in the time between the crucifixion and the resurrection, and then following the resurrection. There's a lot of stuff that the Bible doesn't need to tell us for God's purpose, but still would have been happening at the moment.
Right. So you're always going to have some folks that, out of their love for the Word and feeling that nothing can ever be misrepresented, that will have a problem if something does not line up with every last line of Scripture. You know, if it's not just a straight adaptation of, say, Matthew or Luke or John. And obviously, they didn't write their Gospels so as to be adapted by directors and producers. Mm-hmm. But the bigger issue that's fair to raise is, okay, are there things that are clearly heterodox? In other words, is there something about the movie that clearly denies fundamentals of the faith, or that completely misportrays why Jesus died or who he understood he was or anything like that? So if folks ask those questions, you feel confident that on the main lines, this movie is in that sense orthodox?
Well, if you look at it in the basic sense, Jesus was crucified. The Sanhedrin brought him before Pilate, who approved the execution, the crucifixion. And there was worry that someone was going to steal the body and try to prove that that Jesus had been resurrected, and that wasn't in the best interest of the Romans or the Sanhedrin, and all that is contextually accurate. So when Jesus is resurrected and the stone's thrown back, you know, they conveyed all that, and they did not deny the resurrection. As a matter of fact, well, I'll be a spoiler if I tell too much, but they didn't deny the resurrection, and in fact, they carried it through all the way to the end, where, you know, more or less exactly what's in the Bible took place. Is it every single dot and dash and every single word perfect? You know, I guess that everybody's going to have to look at it that way. But we were satisfied that it did a good job. And I did not leave, when I watched the movie, I did not leave the movie with the same kind of discomfort that I have in previous movies. This was like, yeah, that's it. That's what we're looking for. And I think Sony has created, and they're a firm brand, have created a habit now of producing movies that are generally resonate well with faith-driven consumers.
Yeah, and listen, if they're doing it to make money and the gospel is getting out through it, and we can use these things as tools for witnessing and Christians can be inspired by it, fine, let them make money. They're a secular company. God can work how he works. Chris, what about the larger work of faith-driven consumer? And I've got a couple of questions, if you can stay on a bit, that relate to some recent things you've written about the NFL and NASCAR. And I just wrote an article about Nike. I want to get your opinion on that. But the larger work of faith-driven consumer, I know it's grown dramatically in a very short period of time, but for our listeners who don't know about what you're doing and the importance of it, share the larger vision and how they can plug in.
Okay. Well, first of all, just contextually really quick, we live in a world of diversity and inclusion. And all of American, the marketplace is all about including people, except they have largely overlooked the reality of faith-driven consumers. So we draw attention to that, both from the consumer's point of view and the brand's point of view. And currently we've rated over 500 brands as to their faith compatibility. That is, in general, how well they're doing at specifically and intentionally including faith-driven consumers in their rainbow of diversity. And it's been a great opportunity to bring a Christian message into the marketplace and say, this is what we believe, and while you don't have to believe it, it's important that you know that we do, because that's how you meet our needs as consumers. And it's just a great opportunity in a rather unconventional way to share the Word of God and to give faith-driven consumers an opportunity to be good stewards in the marketplace.
Now, we do know, for example, that gay activists, human rights campaign, every year they issue a corporate equality index where they rate different companies on how friendly they are to gay activism. Do they have special bathroom provisions for those undergoing sex change surgery? Do they have benefits for same-sex couples even before this was legal, et cetera? And a large number of Fortune 500 companies check out perfectly on their score. The number kept growing. And this was a way for them to say, hey, the buck stops with us. In other words, we'll take our money to companies who agree with us. Are you encouraging on some level Christians to think in similar ways, to say, if this company we know has values diametrically opposed to us, we need to think twice about giving them our business?
Well, we think in those terms only from a different perspective. You mentioned the Human Rights Campaign and their Corporate Equality Index. That's a listing of companies that have specifically and intentionally engaged the gay community. There are currently 407 major companies have a perfect score.
Let me just jump in. I want you to repeat that on the other side of the break. Then I got some sports and Christian consumers questions. I'm with Chris Stone, faith-driven consumer. We've been talking about the movie Risen.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I served the Roman Empire. I fought wars against those who did not believe in our gods. But nothing could prepare me for the truth that has now risen.
He was very special.
They're fanatics.
What was his name?
He was called Yeshua.
The tomb is sealed. Guard it with your life.
If this body vanishes,
we have a potential Messiah.
Where has he gone?
You tell me.
You will track down the corpse of Yeshua.
What happened to the Nazarene?
He's right here. Open your heart and see.
But you get chills just listening to that. Think of seeing it, the new movie Risen, highly recommended by Chris Stone on behalf of Faith-Driven Consumer. Chris, right before the break, we were talking about the Human Rights Campaign, Gay Activist Organization, their Corporate Equality Index, which over the years got more and more Fortune 500 companies to be siding with the goals of gay activists, some of which are quite radical. And they'd put out an index where they go through the companies and check out how do you score and things like that. How many Fortune 500 companies now get a perfect score from the HRC?
407.
407 out of 500. Extraordinary.
They review more than 500. Have somewhere in the mid-800s now. So they have a significant number of perfect scores, and that's the glaring gap in America's universal inclusion claim of distinction of these brands, because there's a glaring gap because faith-driven consumers are largely not included.
Right. And what number of people are, in your view, faith-driven consumers?
17% of the U.S. adult population, 41 million people.
41 million. Got it. All right, so that dwarfs other groups that would be weighing in to say, hey, what about us, just as consumers? What about us? If your only goal is to make money, then consider the things that are important to us as well. You may not want to comment on this because I don't know that you wrote on it. I do want to talk about NFL and NASCAR, the contrast there. But I wrote an article today, it's going viral, about Tiger Woods, Manny Pacquiao, Stephen Curry, and the NBA. And Nike. And I mentioned how Nike never dropped Tiger Woods after his serial adulteries and the scandals that they brought, and destroying his marriage and betraying his kids. They said it's a minor blip overall. We're standing with him. Manny Pacquiao makes one statement about homosexuality, regrettable statement, immediately apologizes for it. So this is on local TV in the Philippines, immediately apologizes, and Nike instantly drops him, says his comments are abhorrent, we have no relationship with him. Seems to me to be a complete double standard. And then I read a story that I can't verify, that Under Armour, we know this part, accepted Stephen Curry's insistence that he put Philippians 4:13 on his sneakers, a part of that verse on his sneakers, and that Nike had an opportunity to sign him and declined, some say for that reason. I don't know about that part, but I do know that it seems to be a very double standard with Nike. Do you want to comment on that or pass?
Well, I'll take a broad view of it because I don't know the specifics of it. We have rated Nike. They have a 100 with the Human Rights Campaign's Corporate Equality Index, and with the Faith Equality Index, they have a 15.
Wow.
So you see there's a glaring gap there, and we find this where there's a lack of intentionality for including faith-driven consumers. So when you speak out and you somehow disparage the gay community, that is an unforgivable sin in corporate America. Tiger Woods, obviously, his indiscretions did not reach that level, and I think that's part of the gap that we're seeing throughout our marketplace and what we're trying to close the gap.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're not saying it was good that he made the derogatory comment, but he immediately apologized, and that's it, unforgivable. But what Tiger Woods did is a minor blip. All right, NFL, I've been thinking about this, Chris, and thinking about writing about it, and part of what you sent out via email a couple weeks back got me going on it. These NFL players really put their bodies on the line every week. They certainly risk their life, their health, playing the game they play. It's a very challenging physical violence sport. They know their lifespan in the NFL is normally short, and they can have effects of their playing years for a long time to come after that. And a good number of the athletes are Christian, including some of the biggest stars. And yet, you know, you have the Super Bowl, which the entertainment is as worldly as can be, and then some would argue sending out gay positive messages as well, gay activist messages. And then there's just a lot, the way the NFL operates, that is totally pro-gay activist and stifling of Christian expression that would have any issue whatsoever. What if the Christian players just said, hey, we're not going to play until you stop taking sides in the culture wars and become neutral? I mean, the NFL would stop overnight if that was the case. What's your larger take on what's happening and the inequality?
Well, you know, we find this gap exists between how faith-driven consumers are included versus other communities. And we rated the NFL as a 24. We rated NASCAR, as an example, as a 50. So there's a gap. Now, a 50 is twice as good as a 24, but it's still only half as good as it could be, because we have a 100-point scale. So they both have a long way to go. What we do is we engage, instead of a boycott, we engage in a boycott. That's B-U-I, boycott, which is to reward those who do it better and encourage others to do it, encourage those who are doing it well, and to, I'll get it right in a minute, we're going to reward those who do it well and encourage those who can do it better. So in that sense, we're looking to build a better marketplace, a better world, by including faith-driven consumers at parity with other communities that are being prioritized by American brands.
Got it. And Chris, if folks want to get involved, add their names so that the weight of what you're doing becomes heavier and heavier, stronger and stronger, what's the best place for them to connect with you?
You know, if they will go to the website, faithdrivenconsumer.com, that's faithdrivenconsumer.com, there's a tab called Take Action, and you can join the community, you can volunteer, you can engage, you can contact brands, and the format's all laid out. You just have to engage. It's a wonderful opportunity to let brands know. We live in a transparent marketplace. Let brands know what's important to you.
Got it. All right, friends, nothing to lose by doing it. You'll get informative emails as well that are eye-opening, that'll point you to positive things you can do. Hey, let's let our voice be heard. We're consumers. We're spending a lot of money every day just living in this world. Let our voices be heard for equality and fairness. Chris, thanks so much for joining us. Much appreciated.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. Good day.
God bless.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
You're a man of faith. You believe in God. But everybody said, okay, he's going to wind up, Ted Cruz, with the evangelicals. You actually beat Ted Cruz with the evangelicals. How'd you do that?
Substantially. Well, I'll tell you, I got a great deal of help from Jerry Falwell Jr. He's the head of Liberty University, and he has done an incredible job, and he's respected by everybody. And he came out and endorsed me. And you know, every candidate goes through Liberty University. This place is unbelievable. You have to see the auditorium and the stadium, actually, an arena that we speak in. And every single candidate goes there. And people were shocked when he came out in favor of me. And that was a big endorsement. I had Robert Jeffress, you know, Pastor Jeffress, who has been so incredible in his support. He's been on your show many times, but he came out in favor of me. And, you know, hey, look, I am a good Christian. I really am. And I think the evangelicals saw that.
All right. I still find that quote a little baffling for several reasons. This is Michael Brown. That, of course, was the voice of Donald Trump, Fox and Friends, over the weekend, asking how he got so much of the evangelical vote in South Carolina. If you asked a few months ago, even a few weeks ago, who'll get the evangelical vote in South Carolina, well, the overwhelming choice would have been Ted Cruz. Mike Huckabee would have been in competition for that, but Governor Huckabee had dropped out. Perhaps some others, conservatives like Rick Santorum, they were no longer there. An early one like Scott Walker, he dropped out right at the beginning. So the most logical choice for evangelicals was going to be Ted Cruz. Maybe after that, Marco Rubio, but certainly not Donald Trump. That would have been the conventional wisdom. That's what I would have thought a few weeks back. That's what the Cruz campaign presumably would have thought. It didn't turn out that way. Now, Donald Trump says, yeah, the endorsement of Jerry Falwell helped. I'm sure it did. Robert Jeffress, I didn't know Robert Jeffress endorsed him. I thought he appeared with him but didn't actually endorse him. That's what I'd heard Pastor Jeffress say in an interview with James Robison. But in point of fact, I don't think that evangelicals who voted for Donald Trump voted for him because they thought he was a good Christian. So I'm polling on Twitter right now, but if you'd like to call in, I'm curious. I didn't get to this the last hour. I put the question out, but didn't get to it. 866-348-7884. If you're a Trump supporter, I'm not going to argue with you. You know I'm not a Trump supporter. If it came down to Donald Trump versus Hillary Clinton, I could not vote for her. I'd have to pray about whether I'm to vote for him, whether it's the right thing to do. But I'm not here to argue your position. I'm not here to dispute what you should or shouldn't do. That's not what I'm talking about today. I'm just curious about the Christian side. That's my angle. I'm not a political pundit. I'm not a conservative radio host. I am, more than anything, a follower of Jesus. I am your voice of moral, cultural, spiritual revolution. And everything I say comes from that context. All right? So I put this on Twitter. If you're a Trump supporter, do you believe he's a real Christian? And I don't want to tell you what the answers are quite yet from those who responded, but you'll find it interesting. So Donald Trump said, hey, the evangelicals know I'm a good Christian. I have a question for Mr. Trump. Sir, how long have you been a good Christian? How long have you been a good Christian? If you say, well, all my life, I'm raised Presbyterian, okay, then that confirms what most all of us know, that you have no clue what it means to be a Christian. And that if you could, quote, be a good Christian and boast about multiple adulteries in the past, if you could be a good Christian and build a casino with a strip club in it, what, 36,000 square feet of adult entertainment, and be known as a vulgar, profane man in many ways and kind of boast about that, if you could do all that and be a good Christian, then obviously you haven't and never need to ask God's forgiveness, then you haven't the slightest idea of what it means to be a Christian. If, however, you say, well, I've rediscovered my faith recently. Oh, all right, maybe something's going on. We want to pray for that anyway. But that at least would be different. If he said, I'm ashamed of many things I did in the past, they were hardly Christian. But I've never heard him say that. But that's not even my issue. I'm assuming, of course, he's not a Christian. We're praying for him to know the Lord. And I'm assuming that those voting for him, the vast majority, say, yeah, we know he's not a Christian. But that doesn't matter. Again, I'm not arguing whether it should matter or not right now, but just if you're voting for him, do you think he's a Christian?
God of light, hear our cry. Send the fire.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
So this has been my understanding. I'm going to switch gears in a moment, but this has been my understanding that the vast majority of evangelical Christians who are supporting Donald Trump, which is a surprisingly high number, grieves me in many ways, but it's a surprisingly high number, are supporting him saying, we know he's not a Christian. And we don't like a lot of the things he says and does. But we think he can get the job done. We've had it with politicians. We believe he's not going to back down. We need a strong leader to turn things around, and he's the man. And our biggest issues are economy and security, and he's going to deliver on the goods, and that's why we're backing him. And we don't trust the others, and Ted Cruz is an evangelical, but we don't trust his integrity. And we've had it with career politicians, so that's why we're voting for him. That's what I think most evangelicals who are voting for Donald Trump are saying. Now, some are saying, oh, no doubt he's a Christian, like Jerry Falwell Jr. I deeply, deeply question that for quite a few reasons. Quite a few reasons. Some are obvious, some are not as obvious, but quite a few reasons. But the poll I'm doing now on Twitter, and again, it's only asking for Trump supporters to respond, so that's going to limit the response. But so far, just the first handful of votes that have come in, since I posted it, the first 50-something votes that have come in, if you're a Trump supporter, do you believe he's a real Christian? 87% say no. 13% say yes. 87% say no. That's exactly what I think. That they say, we know he's not a Christian. We don't claim he's a Christian. We just think God's raised him up for this purpose, or he's the best candidate that we have. We don't trust the other guys, or whatever. Now, again, I'm not going to reiterate the concerns I have with his candidacy. And if he does become the nominee, I certainly pray for God to get hold of him and use him. So that's a given. Look, I would love to be wrong about every concern that I have. Trust me on that. My goal is not to be right. My goal is to help people. All right? I would rather be wrong. I would have been very happy to have been wrong about President Obama. I would have been thrilled. I would have shouted it from the rooftops. Boy, was I wrong. But the obvious things that we said would come have come. That's who he was. And he's been true to that. He was who he was. He may not have told everybody who he was, but those that knew it, he was radical, and he's been true to that, unfortunately. I would have been thrilled to have been wrong about him. And there are others I was hopeful for and didn't pan out that well. Wish they had. So my goal is not to be right. My goal is to be helpful and to speak the truth. My goal is not to gain popularity votes. My goal is not to win brownie points. My goal is to speak the truth in love, regardless of cost or consequence. And that's why most of you listen. Yeah, so that poll, even though it's just the first handful of votes, 50-something votes, and I don't know how many I'll get. You know, on a Twitter feed, we only have 19.6 thousand followers. Facebook, we have 40,000 plus. But we just can't do a poll as easily there. We have to read the comments, whereas here it's just computed automatically. At least we don't know how to do it that way on Facebook, if it can be done for free. But anyhow, it can be done on Twitter. So I don't know how many Trump supporters that I have out of my 19,600, and the most responses I've ever gotten on Twitter is about 1,000 responses. So it's still going to be limited, but it is representative. It is representative, and that is what I expect. Listen to me. Please hear me. I would much rather people said, we know he's not a Christian, but here are the reasons we're voting for him, than say, no, don't judge his heart. We think he's a good Christian. That becomes mind-boggling to me. Interestingly, in South Carolina, Senator Cruz had the endorsement of 350 pastors and faith leaders. I'm quite sure Donald Trump had nowhere near that in terms of public endorsements. I should say, as far as I know, he had nowhere near that. And yet there were pastors who said, we were surprised. We endorsed Senator Cruz, and a lot of our congregants voted for Donald Trump. And I think it points to a lot of things in our culture, in our society. And I made one comment. I made one comment and tweeted this out the other day. If some, not all, not most, if some pastors entertain their congregants more than they challenge them, is it any wonder that many of them voted for a reality TV star? Does that surprise us? David Brody with CBN News had a very perceptive article on why evangelicals voted for Donald Trump and why more didn't vote for Ted Cruz. And he had some interesting thoughts that, one, even though Ted Cruz is the ultimate anti-establishment guy, if you want someone to take on Washington, it's Ted Cruz, more than Donald Trump, more than any other candidates. He's done it. That's why he's so hated. That's why so many people despise him within the government, within Congress. When he calls it the Washington cartel, I mean that, and when he calls the Speaker of the House or Majority Leader a liar, says you're lying publicly, that does not win you a lot of votes of favor. But he sounds to many like an insider. In other words, he talks legalese. He talks like a senator, whereas Trump just talks like a businessman. So even though Trump is the ultimate outsider, he is perceived as being an insider. I think that's a good observation, something that others have seen as well. And because a couple of things have been done that are regrettable, all right, a couple of things have been done, mailer in Iowa and then some misinformation getting out. Again, Senator Cruz had nothing to do with the misinformation getting out about Dr. Carson. And then maybe one or two other minor things afterwards that this thing, well, he's not telling the truth. And that's been a Trump tactic and Senator Rubio. He's a liar, he's a liar, he's a liar. He's a liar. Well, people hear that enough. The media reports things enough and people start to question. And as one closer to the campaign, I could say I trust his integrity. I trust his integrity. And where I had concerns about a couple of these little things, I shared that openly with campaign leaders as someone who endorsed him. And said, hey, for this is very important to preserve integrity, to make sure that there's nothing in the whole campaign with any loose ends. But these are factors, I think, that were real factors that impacted things. Now, I'm still praying for God's best. Even though I've endorsed Senator Cruz, my prayer is always, God, you're very best for America. And I wonder also, as many are concerned, is God giving us what's best or what we deserve? You know, we have what we ask for in a certain sense. That's all of great interest. And we should be praying for all the candidates, praying for Hillary Clinton, Bernie Sanders as well, and continue to pray for President Obama during his term and for God's really work in his life after he's done with being the president. I can't imagine that. I mean, think of being the most powerful person, naturally speaking, in the world, and then that's it. I mean, obviously, he'll be an influential man after that, but can you imagine dealing with that? On the one hand, the pressure, no more pressure, that's good, Secret Service for life. But when that's been your whole identity, man, how do you just go on being a citizen again? Interesting. 866-34-TRUTH. All right, let me grab a call or two, and then I want to change gears and focus on something very important that's about to happen a little over an hour from now. Fort Worth, Texas, Margie, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Yes, Dr. Brown. I just enjoy your program so very much.
Well, thank you.
You were talking the other day. You said something about, I was talking about the Antichrist. A man called in about the Antichrist, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I was sitting here thinking about, should I call and talk to Dr. Brown when I feel like that he has all the pretense and the I'm going to do this and this self-exalting, you know, like I'm God, I'm going to do all of these things. And I just thought that's just the way the Antichrist comes on the scene. He just comes on, you know, promises all these wonderful things. And then, you know, when the devil enters into him, then he's turns the other way.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
things that he promises and stuff, and I feel like he's buying the presidency.
Yeah, well, here's what's really fascinating. I want to say honestly that I had not followed his career at all. You know, I obviously knew his name like everybody. I'd never seen his reality TV show.
No,
but the guy is way, way, way sharper and savvy than I would have imagined. And in other words, I knew him as kind of an exaggerated figure, but this guy knows what he's doing. He knows how to control the media. He knows how to get millions of dollars of free publicity. And he tells you, look, I'm going to use hyperbole and bravado. He tells you in his Art of the Deal book, I'm going to do this, and it may not be the full reality, but I got to sell something even bigger to get people excited. And he's doing it, Look, and people really believe he's gonna build that wall. Mexico's gonna pay for it. So let me just say this: as far as the Antichrist part, I would just say this. You know, when people said Barack Obama's the Antichrist or Mikhail Gorbachev's the Antichrist, he's got the mark of the beast on his head, or Donald Trump's an Antichrist. Oh, of course, I don't believe that for a split second. And you're not saying that. But what I see is how a nation can rally behind a leader like this. And I am not comparing Donald Trump to Adolf Hitler. I'm not. But you see how with national fears and national anger, how a radical leader can draw people behind him. Again, I'm not making that comparison in terms of the people, but it's disturbing and it's fascinating to look at how the masses will follow.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to The Line of Fire. About 1 hour from now, a rally will begin in the city of Charlotte. If you live anywhere nearby, if you can make it over there, your presence will really make a difference. It's right in the heart of the city, uptown Charlotte, in front of the Charlotte-Mecklenburg government building. And I'll be speaking probably about an hour and 15 minutes from now, God willing, and others will be speaking. It's going to be a very, very important day. It's going to send a message to the state. Right now, the city council is overwhelmingly poised to pass a bill called the LGBT Anti-Discrimination Bill. It is a bill that will do more harm than good by far. It is a bill that will discriminate against the views, convictions, beliefs of religious and conservative people through the city. It's a bill that in order to accommodate, say, 3 out of 1,000 who identify as transgender will potentially embarrass, inconvenience, or even endanger the 997. It is social madness. It is absolute social madness. And in point of fact, it opens the door to heterosexual predators. Here, listen. When you say if someone identifies, here's a man identifies as a woman. He's clearly a biological male. He identifies as a woman. He's got a wig and a dress, and he walks into the ladies' room. All right. Aside from, okay, how does that feel to the 8-year-old girl who's walking out with her sister from the bathroom, and the man comes walking in? How does it feel to the woman who was raped in a bathroom previously by a heterosexual predator when here is clearly a biological male walking in there wearing a dress? And then how do you keep out those who are heterosexual voyeurs? How do you keep them out? You don't. You can't, because you can't distinguish between them. So 2 weeks ago in Seattle, a man undressed in a women's locker room, citing a new state rule that allows people to choose a bathroom based on gender identity. Concerned mom from Washington emailed me or posted on Facebook. Just 2 weeks ago, a boy around the age of 13 walked right into the girls' side of the women's locker room. All he did was sit down and scroll through his phone. Little girls were surprised when they came in from showering with their towels wrapped around them to see him sitting there. My daughter was one of those girls. This policy opens the door to those who have malicious intent. Why in the world would the city council vote for this? And by the way, if they do vote for it, which in the natural they're going to, they should be voted out for doing it. Those who voted against it should be commended. And Governor McCrory, who was the mayor of Charlotte for 14 years, he's weighed in saying, I normally don't weigh in on citywide things, but this affects public safety. This is not good. And this, in fact, is going to get a state response. The more people we have at that rally, the better message we send to the state. 2012, also in Washington, female high school students sharing a college campus swimming pool were shocked to see a 45-year-old male student who identifies as Colleen sitting naked in their sauna. The police report stated that she was exposing her male genitalia. The girls were traumatized, the parents outraged, but college officials said they couldn't do anything because of state policies against gender identity discrimination. That's what Charlotte's about to introduce. Twice this past year, a woman in Waltham, Massachusetts, has encountered a man urinating in the ladies' restroom of her office building. He had long hair that was made up like a woman's and apparently was in women's clothes. At one point, he exposed his male private parts to her. The lady says, I was shaking by the time I got back to my office. California, 2013, a man dressed up like a woman was arrested after entering a Macy's women's restroom in order to videotape women. He spent 2 hours in the restroom before his camera was noticed by a customer. In Oregon, in 2011, a man who had prior sex offenses against 5 to 9-year-old girls was arrested after he entered a women's locker room dressed in a bikini and started talking to girls in the hot tub. City council members, what are you thinking? Mayor Roberts, what are you thinking? You want to bring this on this city here? You want to look at the families in the face to face and say, yeah, we're the ones responsible for your kid being traumatized or letting this heterosexual predator in because we were concerned about the struggles of a handful of transgenders? I care about them, too. You don't turn the world upside down to help them. We work with them to try to find wholeness for them, but you do not turn the world upside down. You say it's inconvenient. You don't inconvenience everybody else, do you? If some people on the road can only drive 20 miles an hour, do you say, okay, we lower the speed limit for everybody? If there's a kid in school that is blind and there's not a school for the blind in their district, do you make everybody read with their eyes closed and read Braille? Or do you help that kid as much as you can, but you don't inconvenience everybody else? But here, the struggles of a few are now put on everybody. And not only so, the discrimination issues become big because if Charlotte passes this bill, you're a Christian business owner, you're a photographer, gay couple comes in, they say, we would like you to shoot our wedding. You say, no, thanks, I can't, I'm a Christian, but go across the street, my colleague there, he's happy to do it, and tell him I sent you, you get a discount. You could end up being fined for that. You could lose your business, you could potentially go to jail. Why? Charlotte, why pass this? Why push it forward? It is radical gay activism that will not help the city, will only hurt. And even with all the surveys done that gay activists tried to gather information, it was scant in terms of the abuses. And, you know, here, people are upset that some guys driving by in their truck call them a bad word. I don't like that word either. I wish it didn't happen. But this bill is not going to stop them from doing that. Last year, when I talked to some protesters at debate at the rally, because we had to do this last year, it got defeated last year, it's been pushed again. One supporter of the bill told me, if I believe I'm a horse, I can use the stable since I'm not hurting anyone. Another protester told me, if I believe I'm black, then I'm black. This is social madness. So please pray that the Lord will work, that eyes will be opened, that if the city council decides to do the wrong thing, if the city council decides to do that which is ugly, and destructive and ultimately discriminatory in the city. If that's the case, then by all means, we need the state to act and overturn this. At the same time, we're going to reach out to everyone who identifies as LGBT with the love of God and say, hey, we don't support your activism, but we care about you as human beings. That may seem contradictory to you, but we're neighbors. Let's talk and get to know each other. So please pray. Hopefully we'll get a videotape of the short talk I give, 5 or 7 minutes, and we'll post that for you later. And stand with me, friends. We are on the front lines. I wrote a letter that it took some days to write, got the help of some attorneys and others. It's 8 pages long. It was presented with, 15 pages of signatures from business leaders, community leaders, involved individuals, pastors, faith leaders. So I'm holding it in my hands right now here. You can hear all the pages. I wrote the letter on behalf of the Coalition of Conscience, signed by all these leaders. Stand with us. We are on the front lines, but we do need your help. Help amplify my voice across the country, because my voice, friends, really is your voice. To stand with us as a torchbearer, in fact, go to the website. You will be super blessed. We've got a video with some exciting updates about what we're seeing happen around America and around the world and the impact we're able to have. And if you stand with us the next 2 weeks, we're going to do something very special that we have never done it before that'll really bless you. Go to Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org, and join us today. It's self-explanatory once you get there. My bottom line, we're going to stand, we're going to do what's right, regardless of cost or consequence. Friends, that's what disciples do.